The Jen, Gabe, and Chewy podcast is sponsored by Celsius Energy Drink, and I am here to tell you it makes a huge difference in my mornings. With a unique blend of essential energy and key vitamins, Celsius is your partner to an active lifestyle. My favorite, the peach vibe. Learn more at Celsius.com and pick up Celsius Energy Drinks today. She wants to ride it, she's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever, she's too excited. Her man look like he wanna fight. He ain't doing nothing but running his mouth. Talk about it, we all about it. They make the plans. We got excitement from Malik Willis. Just like a mountain, you heard about it. Who's pumped up? She wants to ride it, she's trying
nobody
to
hide it. I'm cool as ever, she's new backup quarterback in town for the Green Bay Packers. Malik Willis, Packers trading a non-conditional. So just straight up a seventh round pick for a quarterback who just a couple of seasons ago went in the third round. But if the question we're asking ourselves, which is the one that Chewy always asks when it comes to, okay, backup quarterback, your starter goes down for four games, do you have somebody that can go 2-2 and kind of keep the ship afloat? And look, I, if we're being honest, 2-2 almost seems like a luxury. Because one of those years where Rodgers got hurt, because he got hurt in 2013, he got hurt then again in 2017 with the collarbone injuries. I mean, the Packers weren't 500 without him. Now, 2013, certainly they got lucky and the division ended up being bad, so they were able to win the division just, you know, with Rodgers coming back. I mean, it's not like Brett Hundley went 2-2 in the games that Aaron Rodgers was missing. No, they were bad. The team was bad. They only won a couple of games, but they were able to keep it afloat and stay alive. If they would have won out, Rodgers came back, threw a bunch of picks, didn't work out. So 2-2 seems like a luxury. But anyway, that's kind of been the barometer that we've used on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy for, okay, how good is your backup quarterback? And if the answer to the question, okay, Love is down for four games. You know, Michael Pratt's in there. Sean Clifford's in there. It seemed like the best we could probably hope for was 1-3. With Malik Willis, I kind of feel the answer's the same. Like, this isn't somebody, this is somebody who's been in the league a couple of years and had some potential when he first came in two seasons ago. But he's also a guy as a rookie that the Titans decided after a couple of games that Josh Dobbs, this was like the start of Josh Dobbs. He'd been in the league for a while, Joshua Dobbs, the Pastronaut. This was the kickoff to him becoming the guy that would come in and just start on a moment's notice. Because that's basically what he did. He was signed on the practice squad December 21st, 2022. 8 days later, he was starting over Malik Willis on a Thursday night game. In a game the Titans needed to win to keep their playoff hopes alive, they decided Malik Willis wasn't their guy. And now they've moved off from him. I guess I would have rather stuck with what they had, but whatever. I mean, they're all kind of the same. They have different skill sets, clearly, between Pratt and Clifford and Malik Willis. Willis, very good athlete, can run, scramble. Maybe that's something that they want, a little bit of a different backup to come in. But Josh, like, how am I supposed to feel about this move? Nothing, right? Am I supposed to feel, backup quarterback, that's taken care of.
I don't feel that way. I feel almost, like, puzzled. It seems like they just added another developmental option to the developmental options they already have. Like, Malik Willis isn't further along in his career. He's not some veteran that can, like, you know, spot start and learn an offense particularly quick. He's also someone who's like a running option, so it's kind of, you would have to cater the offense to some degree more around a Malik Willis. Jordan Love can run, but not the same way Malik Willis can. The reason he was exciting is because, you know, he had a big arm. He can make some plays with his feet, but he came from Liberty and was rather inconsistent. With the way the Titans have treated him, you mentioned the bringing in guys off the street to start that same week. They also drafted Will Levis just immediately after.
Yeah.
They spent a third round pick and then a first round pick, and we're like, we got to figure something out here because this isn't good enough. When people were mentioning Titans quarterback, I thought Ryan Tannehill was a seemingly decent option at that. The Packers investing any sort of draft capital, a seventh round pick is a seventh, what it is, whatever. Like, I don't really think picks are that valued even to the Packers after like the fifth round.
Sure.
Those are kind of just preferred walk-ons, in a way. Guys they don't want to have to pay extra on a practice squad to get. Those are guys they just kind of bring in and be like, all right, here it is. We get them price-controlled. Nobody else can take them. I don't know what message in particular the Packers are trying to send. Now, Malik Willis did look good in his last opportunity with the Titans in preseason.
Cool.
But that's the nicest thing I can say about him. Is the last time he played, he looked like a serviceable quarterback. Now, who knows what all went into that? Because I sure as hell wasn't watching Malik Willis with the Titans. I'm inclined to trust the Packers often when it comes to guys like this. But we've also seen it fail. Massive. Like DeShone Kizer.
Yeah.
Like that was an experiment that just went nowhere.
Which, again, and the DeShone Kizer thing made sense to me.
Yes.
In that, this is a former first round pick. Maybe we get him in here. Maybe we can kind of develop him. He was kind of, low costs. You weren't expecting that much out of DeShone Kizer. And yeah, it didn't work out. I guess I look at Willis as maybe has a little more upside than. I mean, certainly than Pratt, a little more upside than Clifford. But in terms of immediate need for the Green Bay Packers, because don't get me wrong, there are a lot of depth needs across this roster, quarterback being one of them. This doesn't solve anything.
Yeah.
This leaves me with the same feeling that I had about Clifford or Pratt. Okay, sure. All right, if Jordan Love goes down, we're just kind of screwed, but which is true because this is a great job by Tom Silverstein over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Here is, because he suggests, because it was only a seventh round pick, that if somebody better becomes available, the Packers would just move on from Willis and he can be an insurance policy if that's what you want from him. But here are some of the other possibilities he lists in his piece at the Journal Sentinel. Tell me what these guys do for you, Joshy. Jaren Hall in Minnesota. Mm. Tyler Huntley, Cleveland. Mm. It's actually probably the best of the bunch there.
Yes.
Trey Lance, Dallas. Mm.
Okay. He had 7 turnovers.
I mean, he threw
five interceptions.
He threw for 323 yards, though. And had that 49-yard touchdown run.
Aaron Rodgers played entire seasons without that many interceptions.
Yeah, well, I understand. Zach Wilson. Jake Haener.
I don't even know that name.
He's out of New Orleans. Tanner McKee. Spencer Rattler.
That one, he looked pretty decent. But also kind of the same thing Malik Willis is.
He's the same thing. Yes. It's the same picture.
Uh-huh.
And then he also throws in Joe Milton from New England. And then he goes on to say, problem that a bunch of teams are going to keep 3 quarterbacks probably means Wilson, Haener, Fields, McKee, Rattler, Milton, all of whom look good in the preseason, won't be available.
The thing that we're talking about backup quarterback here, and it is not particularly important unless it is. It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, this might not be a factor whatsoever, but the amount of quarterbacks that started games last season, I believe, was in the 60s. So having a backup is almost a necessity at this point. Yep. We're so used to Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre playing through literally everything. Unless it's like catastrophic injury with Aaron Rodgers.
Because Rodgers played through a lot.
Yes.
He just broke his collarbone twice.
Yes.
And then missed a bunch of
games. He also played through broken bones.
Oh, yeah. He absolutely did.
So, like, strategically, I can't make sense of it because a team we view as contenders for the Super Bowl, maybe a year early on that, but a team you think could very well end up in an NFC championship game, and then who knows what happens. You can win that game. You can lose that game. The expectations are playoffs and how far can you go in them at this point. You're not improving that position or necessarily giving yourself an extra win or two there. That's what's confusing to me. You kind of made a lateral move. Now, could Malik Willis be a step up from Sean Clifford and Michael Pratt? Sure. Is he a guy you feel any more confident than you did with the two you had? No.
You feel lucky if you win one out of three games.
Yes.
Again, if the baseline we're using is your quarterback goes down. And by the way, I think a lot of teams in the NFL are not able to answer, okay, our starter goes down, can we go 2-2 without him?
Right.
I mean, a lot of teams aren't going 2-2 with their regular starting quarterback because, again, a bunch of teams are bad. But how do you feel about these guys? Because the last group of guys we can go through are the veterans. C.J. Beathard. Taylor Heinicke?
Maybe.
Case Keenum?
Maybe.
Brett Rippon?
No.
Mike White?
Maybe.
Jeff Driskel?
No.
It's bad out there, man.
It is.
But and so Ron hits us up. What they need to do is bring in your guy, Tannehill. I have been a Ryan Tannehill hater famously on this show. Less upside, but we aren't looking for that. We're looking for the high floor. Here's the problem with that, Ron. It ain't happening. They could have brought in Ryan Tannehill literally any day over the last 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do it. Doesn't make me think that all of a sudden today, after making a trade, and even if it's as little as a seventh-round draft pick that they gave up for Malik Willis, they're not turning around and signing somebody like that. They want somebody who has been in the league. I think they want somebody who's been in a camp, which is why Tom Silverstein listed all those players we just went through in his piece over at the Journal Center.
What I found interesting is, philosophically, the Packers have clearly moved on from overaged players, players of Tannehill's age. But when it comes to the backup quarterback position, it feels like the one place you should and you can get away with a guy who's over the hill in terms of his NFL career.
Two spots where I'm okay with somebody who's older. There are two.
Kicker.
Yep. That's
backup
the other one.
Quarterback.
Correct.
Yes. Yes. That feels like where you should break your rules, because on a grand scale, I totally agree with Goody. It's a young man's game.
Yeah.
It always has been. Letting guys age far too long doesn't really work for you.
Because it's a young man's game at every other spot, because the game's about athleticism.
Yes.
And quarterback can be about athleticism if you have somebody like Lamar Jackson or Jalen Hurts. It can be about that. But a lot of times it's not about athleticism. Look at, again, Aaron Rodgers, 40 years old, coming off an Achilles injury. He's not the athlete he was in his 20s. Jets don't care.
Right.
Because that position's not necessarily about that. And kicker has never been about athleticism.
Nope.
It's, do you have a strong enough leg, and can you be accurate when we put you out on the field?
Yeah, so to kind of carry that into this position and this spot, it feels like a risk that you don't have to take. A level of uncertainty that just feels unnecessary, that could be almost catastrophic in a way. Like, Malik Willis could, like, I think we're also underrating the fact of, like, if you have to play one of those guys and it's horrific.
Yeah.
Like, it hurts the team's morale.
Yeah.
It's not simply just, oh, it's a loss, it's the backup. Like, the guys look around and start questioning everything. They're not just questioning Malik Willis or Sean Clifford or Michael Pratt. They're going, are we this good? Should we be a playoff team? Like, I think it helps to have a guy that you can be confident in.
A couple of questions here at the talking text line, then we'll get to Jason Wilde. We can ask Jason some of these, but I feel like I can answer. Can the reason that this from Craig, can the reason of getting Willis is because he's a running quarterback, Hurts is a runner, to help the defense? No, you're not giving up a seventh round pick just for 1 week of practice against a non-divisional team.
Will it be convenient in the intervening week? Sure, but that's not why they made the move.
could they use Malik Willis as a gadget player in the red zone with Love still on the field? Understand the backup role is different with the current situation. Look, no.
That's not the intent.
No, that's not the intent either. Because, I mean, Willis is a good athlete, but...
Great.
They've got really good athletes. But who are you taking off the field in that spot? Like, you're not taking Jaden Reed. Like, Jaden Reed, whatever gadget play you want to run, you could probably just run with Jaden Reed instead. Because he's a receiver.
Yeah, teams don't typically risk their backup. Because if you do some sort of gadget play and injure your backup, you're now down to one quarterback.
Yeah. Like, Taysom Hill's the only one, like, who's done that. And I would even argue he was just an emergency quarterback at this point in his career. in New Orleans. We'll get Jason Wilde's reaction to this, plus talk about some other cuts that could potentially happen, as today is roster cutdown day in the NFL. They go down to at 3 p.m. today, they'll go down to 53 men on the active roster. Jason Wilde coming up next on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Ready? Put.
All Packers, all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
We'll get to Jason Wilde in just a moment. But Mark Chmura's back. We got the big guy, Chewy.
Hi, buddy. Bad storms last night. We fumbled the opening drive, but they fumbled it right back to us. So we're in good shape.
We got it back. We're ready to go. Hopefully Jason is ready to go here shortly as well. Do you know anything about Malik Willis? Like, when Malik Willis, you saw, we were texting about this yesterday, come across your phone, you're like, who? Malik Willis. Could you have told me that he played for the Titans?
Yeah, it was either Titans or Atlanta. I knew it was one of the two.
Okay.
He's an upgrade. Come on, Gabe.
Okay. All right. Can the Packers go 2-2 with Malik Willis?
Depending on who they play.
No, the answer's no. Chewy, the Titans moved on from this guy with a 7th-round pick. 2 years ago, instead of having him start a game that they needed to win, they decided Joshua Dobbs, who at that point had not started a game in his NFL career and had just joined the team about a week earlier, they went, yeah, we'll go with Dobbs.
Yeah, but at least he can get outside the pocket and just tell him to run. So what you do is you just kind of throw, you know, like, all right, we're getting rid of you, but you're going to get killed, but we're going to try to win the game here. So that's okay. Clifford, you can't do that.
No, I mean...
He's an athlete.
Yeah.
Right? He's a better athlete than Clifford.
He's a better athlete. He's the best athlete they have at the quarterback position.
Well, let's ask Jason. Will know.
Jason Wilde, he is our friend. He is our teammate. He is Jason Wilde. He joins us 3 times a week here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Good morning, Jason.
I'm not sure I want to be on the show today.
What?
It's a dude Tuesday.
Yeah. What did we do?
You could you be any more of a negative Nancy about this?
I guess here's the thing, Jason.
Yeah, get him.
I don't understand it, Jason, because I don't think that this is an upgrade in any way, shape, or form. If the question is, because this is how we measure it on this show, because this is the question Chewy always asks about the backup quarterback. If Love goes down for 4 games, can you go 2-2 with whoever the backup is? And I feel my answer is the same, whether it's Willis, whether it's Pratt, whether it's Clifford, of no, they can't go 2-2. So I guess I just don't understand what the point of this move was.
It's a distressed asset who was pretty highly regarded coming out, who has probably not gotten a fair shake in Tennessee, right? So there's the John Robinson regime drafts him. This kid, you know, he starts out at Auburn and spends 2 years there and then transfers to Liberty, sits out a year, plays, 2 years there?
Yep.
And then gets drafted, was being looked at as a potential first-round pick, ends up going in the 3rd round. Clearly struggled, right? He was clearly not ready to play as a rookie, which I know a guy like that. His name's Jordan Love. I know everyone loves the attitude of, oh, I always knew he was going to be awesome, but he wasn't always going to be awesome, right? And so Malik Willis gets drafted, is clearly not ready to play as a rookie. So then he goes out and has to play, what, 3 games? Did he start 3 games?
He started 3 games, yes.
They go 1-2, but he's clearly not ready. So that's where things stand for him. They then fire John Robinson late in the year. And they go out and they get Will Levis in the next year's draft with the 33rd overall pick. The new GM, Rand Carthon, is clearly not a Malik Willis fan, which is fine. You know, you go get your guy, and Willis is not your guy. So now he spends last year with a team that doesn't really want him, with a coach that doesn't believe in him. And when they have to go win a game, as you mentioned, you know, I mean, they didn't think Will Levis was ready either, right? I mean, he ended up being the one who plays. But I just, I agree with you on this point. If you're going to go get a backup because you don't think either one of the ones you have in your camp is ready to win a game for your team if Love goes down, then Malik Willis is not any different than those two guys based on what he has proven to this point. That part I totally get. I will not debate you. I will not make fun of you. You're right. My issue with this is there's a chance that this is a guy, you know, the whole, and Shui, you've seen this many times over the years, the whole change of scenery concept. It's a low price that they had to pay. Mm-hmm. They're going to get compensatory picks next year for Runyon leaving. And so paying a seventh round pick is not an expensive price. And they see more talent in him than they see in the other two guys they have. So if this guy doesn't have to play and they get to develop him, they think they can turn him into a player who's going to be not even just a really good backup, but eventually maybe a tradable asset that's worth even more than the seventh round pick they paid. Your point is a very fair one, and it's the same one that I had. Now, the only thing that I would argue is that, is there a chance, you know, he was in a similar system, right, with Arthur Smith when he was, or who was the offensive coordinator after LaFleur left? Was it Arthur Smith?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
That, because obviously Vrabel is a defensive guy. So maybe there's some carryover. Maybe he can build some momentum, and there's a chance that he turns out. But to your point, this is not – I do not see this as, oh, we went out and got – the example I used was Taylor Heinicke. Taylor Heinicke has started games and been effective in the NFL. And I don't know what the Atlanta Falcons' plan is for him with Kirk Cousins and with Michael Penix on their roster. But that was kind of, in my mind, and I don't want to have confirmation bias. Oh, they didn't do what I thought they should do, but that was the guy that I thought, all right, if you're going to go get somebody, he's the guy to go get, because you know that he has played and played well when he has had to start games. Malik Willis does not fit that category. And so to that point, I think it's very fair of you to question. The negativism that I was hearing while I was on hold was a little more intense than I was expecting.
Jason, so what happens with Clifford and Pratt? Both gone, one on the practice squad. What do you think is going to happen there?
I think they've got to keep at least one of them, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, are you ready to have Willis, for example, be the backup in Brazil? Like, is this enough time to have him ready that, let's say something catastrophic happens, and suddenly now they have to play their backup. Is he... In what is it, 10 days? He's got 10 days before they play?
Correct.
Like, is he going to be up to speed quickly enough? I would think, and here was one thing that happened yesterday that I was really curious about, and the trade then happened subsequent to this. There was a thought that neither one of these two merited a roster spot, right? Neither Sean Clifford nor Michael Pratt. But if you cut them both and you feel confident that no one's going to pick them up, and they both get through waivers, in theory, you could put them both on the practice squad, right? And then you could do a game day elevation, whichever one you wanted to have the backup be that week. And that way, neither one is taking up a spot on your 53, but you've got two guys there and you got a backup on game day. Well, the NFLPA vetoed a rule that the NFL wanted to put in place, which was that you would have unlimited elevations for quarterbacks from the practice squad. So if that's the case, you know, maybe they thought that they could get away with that. I don't know. It was the way it was explained to me, it was the third quarterback, so I don't know if that would have worked. But they clearly came out of the game not feeling good about either one of these guys, and now they have to, in my opinion, keep one of them at least for the first couple weeks, because otherwise it's hard for me to fathom Malik Willis being ready if disaster strikes in Sao Paulo.
So you think they're going to carry potentially three quarterbacks?
I don't know what their intention would be. I think they're going to cut both those guys today.
And then just keep one and then elevate.
And then bring back one from the practice squad, elevate that guy on game day for the first game, and then or maybe not at all. I mean, and here's the other thing. If I'm Sean Clifford, maybe not Michael Pratt because he's a rookie seventh round pick, but if I'm Sean Clifford, I'm not sure I want to come back to the practice squad, right? Like, if I'm going to go to a practice squad, maybe I want to go to a different practice squad, because this is a pretty big vote of no confidence about believing in me to be the backup. So, again, I don't know what they're going to do. We'll find out at 3 o'clock, but the bottom line is that Matt LaFleur came out of that game. He had every opportunity to give votes of confidence publicly to both the kickers he had and the backup quarterbacks he had. Not to say, oh, this guy's going to be great, but to say, you know, we feel like we've got guys at both those spots that we think can be our guys. And I know there's been some ups and downs, but we think we've got some pretty good options there regardless of some of the results. That's not what he said. In both instances, he basically said, and we're going to see what else is out there. Right? I mean, that was basically his answer, and we've already seen them do it at the quarterback position.
Jason, running back position, they have four backs. One, I believe, is safe in Josh Jacobs. How do you think that's going to play out?
Bold call on the Josh Jacobs being safe. Well done.
My hot take.
I don't know. And, you know, that's a really interesting scenario, too. I will say this. I think I'm fairly confident that Marshawn Lloyd, their third-round pick, will be put on IR. Now, they have, you know, there's a change in the rules where now you can put two guys on IR immediately at the final cutdown and then have them still be eligible to return. There's a limit of two being able to do that. So I think he's going to be one of them. The complicating factor here is, what exactly does this mean for A.J. Dillon and that stinger that he's dealing with? Like, the last time he had a stinger, he missed the last three games of the season, right? So Is that going to be the case again? Is he sidelined for a couple of weeks? Because then you're down to Emmanuel Wilson, who I always want to call Emmanuel Lewis from Webster. And he's a guy who's obviously shown good things. But I know that when we asked about the idea of him, you know, being a complete back, they kind of admitted that he's not where he needs to be as a pass protector, and he's not as adept coming out of the backfield catching passes as they would like their running backs to be. So he's still, remember, he's a low division two guy. So while I think he makes the team and I think he has some really good qualities, I don't know if he's the guy that you want to be your number two back in Sao Paulo either. So this is for a camp. This is what's weird about this. For a camp where I felt like there weren't that many spots that were up for grabs, and there wasn't really this level of, what are they going to do with this position? I thought their biggest concern was that they had too many good players. They've got all kinds of different question marks that I wasn't anticipating would make the final cutdown day as full of intrigue as I think it's going to be.
So they've already gone outside for the potential backup quarterback spot, Jason. They could go outside for a swing tackle, could go outside for the kicker. I mean, there are a lot of, to that point, for a roster that I thought was, okay, this thing's pretty settled, they're looking for a lot of outside options more than I can remember in recent history.
Yeah, my gut, and nothing more than that, I haven't talked to anybody about it. My gut is that I think Kadeem Telford is going to be there. They're going to keep him as a swing guy. Now, whether or not they also keep Andre Dillard, I'm not sure. But I think in talking to a few people, they really do like Telfort, who was a big-time recruit coming out of high school and went to Florida and then, like, stole, like, credit card numbers or something. It was a whole thing. Ends up at UAB. But he's a – I mean, he's gigantic. And he's actually got pretty good feet from what my untrained eye can tell me. So I think he's one of those guys that kind of, not to this degree yet, but kind of like Rashid Walker, where they see something in him that is worth taking a chance on and maybe going with a guy who's not as experienced. Because the problem that let's use Malik Willis as an example, right? You don't really like your quarterback options. And so you acquired a guy who is not in any way head and shoulders better than what you have. And if you do that at kicker and you do that at swing tackle, what you're just basically doing is saying, well, somebody we don't know, maybe there's a chance he doesn't stink. Because the guys that we do know, we think kind of stink, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like the newness doesn't make it better. And so, you know, I went through all 31 other teams' kicking situations the other day and trying to find, okay, who might a team move on from? And New England has two kickers. The guy that I was interested in was with the Jets. They've got Greg Zuerlein and Austin Siebert, I think his name is, who has kicked in the league before. Like, they're not going to keep two kickers with the Jets. So is there a deal to be made, or like the Cade York trade that Washington just did? I don't know. But again, if these guys become available, you have to at least acknowledge there's a reason why their team is cutting them too, right?
Yeah.
And so I just don't know if there are clear upgrades over what they have that are out there. I still, my gut says that They're just going to say, all right, Anders, we don't want to do to you what the Vikings did to your brother and then regret it. We still think you can work through this. And I think that's what I guess. But I will not in any way be surprised if they cut both of those guys and decide to go in a completely different direction.
But Jason, in your mind, who won the battle?
So here's the thing that sucks about that 32-yard miss that he had. And you know, a couple of guys got on me because when he missed the kick, I said, God dang it. And I sounded like a fan because, you know, that's frowned upon in the press box. It wasn't because I'm an Anders Carlson supporter. You can't be an athlete, be an athletic supporter. It was because I had written the story that he held serve and kept his job. Because he was 22 of 25 over the last week and a half or 2 weeks of camp. Like, he was in a groove. And then he hits a 54-yarder. He makes his extra point. Like, all he has to do is put that through, and everybody's looking at him going, he's the guy, right? Mm-hmm. He's still going to have some ups and downs, but he's the guy. The problem with that kick, and I don't like making a big deal out of one kick, but I thought the issue with that, and I think what the Packers' issue is with it, is that that just underscores the inconsistency, right? He can put a 54-yarder through, and then he misses a chip shot. And when a guy misses a kick, at least one kick, in 10 of your last 12 games, that's your thought process with him, is we're just waiting for the kick he's going to miss today. And that's what happened to him on Saturday, and that's what keeps, I'm sure, Matt LaFleur, as Tom Rinaldi reported, praying every time he goes on the field.
Jason, we certainly appreciate the time, and I know you are going to be busy today with roster cutdown happening at 3 o'clock. Look forward to hearing you on Wilde and Tausch in about 90 minutes.
And I look forward to all your positivity about the Malik Willis era. I'm very excited about it. All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
Jason Wilde joins us three times a week here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Chewy brought up the running back position. It's something we want to dive into as well. We do that coming up next. But the next edition of Behind the Bucks is here on the Bucks Plus Audio Network, presented by Gallagher. Bucks stars share their experiences from competing on the world's biggest stage, the Olympics, from battling against their former Bucks teammates to teaming up with fierce rivals, all for the glory of a gold medal. Behind the Bucks offers unique access and deep storytelling for Bucks fans unlike ever before. Presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Find it Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
I mean, pumpkin seeds.
No, no, no. Little suckers. They might be. What did you say before, Jen?
Sesame but those seeds. Are white. Like, yeah.
No,
white.
These aren't white. No, no. This isn't on the outside. This is on the inside.
Seeds on the inside.
Oh, yeah. So you've got some sort of, like,
scrotum.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Shu, let me ask you this. Of those positions we were just talking about with Jason, where they could go to the outside of the organization, outside of the 100 guys they had in training camp to solve, and they've already done it with one position at backup quarterback. Which has the most impact? Is a backup quarterback, is that the number two running back, the swing tackle, or the kicker? Which one, power rank those four for me.
So what was the first one, Gabe?
Backup quarterback.
Yeah, that's number one. You got to have someone that can win half the games, whatever your starter is out for.
But those guys don't, like, there's like two of those guys in the league. Man.
Yeah, but it's the same as the swing tackle backup, right?
Yeah, but the tackle gets hurt more often than the backup quarterback. I mean, in my lifetime, Chu, in my lifetime of being a Packers fan, basically starting with Favre all the way to now, only twice has a Packers starter missed more than four games or more. That's only happened twice.
Yeah,
like, Tausch had two ACLs. Like, Tausch missed more than that twice in his 10-year career. Belaga had a couple of those ACL surgeries. Like, the tackles get injured more often, and they're just going to play more.
No, I agree. I mean, you could go back to our Super Bowl year where we lose Ken Rutgers, who was a staple at left tackle for 10 years, and then he retires at the end of training camp, and we got a run with Bruce Wilkerson. You know, so I get your point, but Gabe, you ain't winning with a crappy backup quarterback. And yeah, when you are a Super Bowl contending team and your backup quarterbacks, if your starter's out for four games, it's over. It's over.
See, so you say that, but both times that Aaron Rodgers went down with those shoulder injuries, the Packers didn't go 500 without him, and they made the playoffs 1 year and had a chance if he came back and they won the final three games of the regular season. Now he came back and ended up throwing, you know, four interceptions or whatever it was against Carolina in 2017. But, I mean, he missed more than four games both times. They were well below 500 in those games and still had a chance to make the playoffs one time and did make the playoffs another.
I just...
Especially with the seventh team, Jim.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but I mean, okay, let's say their swing tackle sucked.
Yeah.
Right? You could still put Zach Tom over there, and he's going to play okay. Right?
Yeah, but then who are you putting at right tackle?
Skeeter Lutz. You can survive with a right tackle. I'm sorry, you can survive, because everything's in front of you. You put a tight end there. You feed him. I mean, I get your point. I get your point. But you have no chance if your backup quarterback stinks. I mean, that could really just derail a season. It's important to have a good backup quarterback. And every year I played, we had a backup quarterback that could win you half the games of whatever your quarterback is out for.
Except for Doug.
Doug was a good backup. Yeah, he's not a starter. So what? You know who else isn't a starter? Malik Williams or Sean Clifford. You know, if they were starters, because there's probably 22 starters in the NFL that should be starters and the rest are garbage.
Yeah. That's the problem, Chu, like finding an actual backup quarterback. If only 22 of 32 quarterbacks are actually good starters, how are we finding quality backup quarterbacks if we can't even find quality starters enough for every team?
Because if you look at someone like Malik Willis, right? How you coach him up, okay, you're playing the Tennessee Titans, right? His whole team, okay? You form a game plan where it says you look at the first read, you look at the second read, and then you just run. Try to get down, try to get yards, but run. And you kind of throw him to the wolves. I'm sorry, but that's how I would do it. That's how I would do it in college. It'd be kind of like a Tebow offense, you know? All right, let's put option in. You're kind of throwing him to the wolves.
Yeah, I get it, but honestly,
and that's what he is, Gabe. I think, and that's why they went out and got him, because he's a really good athlete, right? Sean Clifford, you can't do that. It's look at your one read, look at your two read, and then try to get a yard. Try to go A.J. Dillon on us.
Honestly, if we're talking about the one of these that's the most important,
yeah,
it's probably the kicker.
Because,
again, backup tackle, backup running back, backup, like, we don't know for sure. No, have a pretty good feeling that the backup running back's going to get some touches. Have a pretty good feeling that at some point, because offensive linemen are in the trenches, there are injuries, that the swing tackle's playing. I know the kicker's playing.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Kicker, okay. It's one of those things that, Chewy, I know you don't like to admit that they're football players, but they have big impacts on the outcomes of games, whether they make or miss kicks.
They do, but look at last year, and Carlson, was he towards the bottom of the NFL when it comes to a percentage of kicks made?
Yes.
How many games did he lose for the Packers last year? It's all about how many games is this person or this backup or this kicker, how many games are they going to lose for you in a year? Like when Ryan Longwell was a rookie, he beats out Brett Conway. Second game of the year, we lose to Philly in Philly because he missed a 22-yarder. All right. Did he lose another game for us the rest of the year? No, he didn't. That's why I'm putting kicker last.
He makes a kick against the 49ers. That game's different.
Sure. That's a playoff game, though. I'm saying regular season.
Well, that's pretty damn big. Is it not?
No, it is, but I'm just saying. How many games did he lose for us last year?
I would say 2 to 3. I can't.
Josh?
Yes.
You're the stats toad.
Okay.
All right, maybe 2. He lost 2, right?
Yeah, and one of which, again, there were other things that happened in the game that didn't, but that game's different if Anders Carlson makes the kick against San Francisco. I'm not saying that's all his fault because Jordan Love threw 2 interceptions and did not play well in the fourth quarter. And I put that more on Jordan than I do Anders. But it is a fact that if he makes a 44-yard kick, which you expect your kicker to be able to do when you are one of the last 8 teams standing, that game's different.
But I'm just telling you, Gabe, the backup quarterback.
But it might not even play.
Everyone loves them until they don't anymore.
But the backup
quarterback. That is the best. That has been known as the best position on the football field. Everyone loves you until you have to play.
But you might not even have to play.
That's true.
That's why I don't think is it important? Sure. But it's not as important as an actual guy deciding games. Because Sean Clifford was the backup last year. How many games did he decide, Chew?
None.
How many games did Anders Carlson decide?
You said 2. Sure.
Seems significantly more important.
Yes, until you need him. Until he loses 4. And then it's bus ticket and Apple time. They're just protecting himself. I think game plan-wise, you can't win with Sean Clifford. Game plan-wise, you can win with Malik Willis. Hold on, Gabe. And you were talking about the running back position.
Yeah.
Don't be surprised if something happens today that blows your mind. I know you don't agree with me, but I'm just...
I think they're just kind of stuck with who they got.
No, they're not. You're not, because there will be good cuts. There will be guys that are cut that, because let me tell you this, Gabe. The roster is different for the San Francisco 49ers than it is the Las Vegas Raiders, right? San Francisco's 49ers going into this year probably had 6 spots available in training camp. Las Vegas Raiders probably have 15.
Sure.
So rosters are different.
Sure, but the issue with running back, Chew, is that's a young man's game, and teams aren't giving up on young guys, and the Packers have shown they don't want to sign any veteran whatsoever.
I'm just saying that this is a possibility when it comes to the running back position. They put Lloyd on year-long IR, out for the whole year, and they cut the other 2, and they pick up a running back from another team, or they trade for another one. I'm just saying that is a possibility.
I guarantee
they're looking at it.
I am telling you this right now. Marshawn Lloyd on year-long IR is not a possibility. That's not happening.
10 to 1?
You just told me. You just told me it was going to happen, and now you're looking for 10 to 1 odds.
I said possibility.
10 to 1 odds.
Josh, do
you
have the
tape? Fishing.
Josh,
fishing for 10 to 1 odds.
What happened to Gabe today?
What do you mean? What
you
happened?
What? This is what I think happened. Can you kill his mic?
All right, my mic is off.
Josh,
yeah,
this is what I think happened, okay? Jen was out today, and then there was a possibility of me being out because Gabe thought that I had the excuse, oh, my internet doesn't work, that I would be, well, it wasn't me. It was my wife.
Never is.
Who got the thing going. Gabe thought I was already at the gym.
True.
Yeah.
Am I right?
You're not
and
wrong.
And who battled? Who battled? I battled to fix this. Well, it wasn't me.
Because that's the only that.
Because you know what? You know what? I'm just going to tell you the truth.
You would have given up before the show even started. Well, doesn't work.
The car was already started. It was a. And she's like, no.
He's
no. Get your ass back down there.
He is
We're
so.
Figure this out.
He's always willing to give up. Like, because this happened when you went to Mexico that one time.
Yes.
And you were just like,
yes.
You know, because we sent you with equipment to potentially do the show because you were generous enough to be like, hey, you know what? It's early enough. I can do the show. Not a big deal. First day, it didn't work. Jerry's like, oh, guess it's not happening. And for whatever reason, Angie's like the most dedicated person to this show. And whatever,
yes, yes.
Like,
because we all went to college. If the professor is a second late,
yep,
class is canceled.
Yeah.
I'm not waiting 5 minutes. I'm not waiting 10 minutes. 1 second, I'm out the door.
And your wife, just for whatever reason, loves making you do the show.
It's probably 2 hours of peace she gets.
Well, yeah. But he wouldn't have been there. He would have been at the gym. He was gone, man. He was gone.
I was. I'm telling you the truth. I was gone. So, and Gabe, it's fine. I'm going to be here for the rest of the show.
Okay.
I'm not gonna be, I won't
right.
abandon you, all right?
All right. Well, then you're Farmer. You were supposed to tell me about corn sweat. I had no idea about this corn sweat thing. Heard about it for the first time in my life yesterday. We'll see if you can educate us all on that. Coming up next on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
You are listening to Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Can I be Chuck Woolery?
Yeah, Tiny Mike.
Tiny Mike.
My average.
I mean.
No, I want to ask the questions.
Tiny Mike. On 94.5 ESPN.
Chewy, you grew up on a farm, right? I'm not remembering that. Wrong. You grew up on a farm.
I worked on a farm.
Oh, worked on a farm. Okay.
Yes.
But still worked on a farm.
Yeah.
Therefore, you've helped out and have even taken a little bit of credit for your neighbor, the Blammer, who you've called Chernobyl corn in the past because he has some corn on his property, hadn't been growing it properly.
Correct.
And now this year it was actually good. He actually had some good corn.
Because I called the guy who owned the farm that I work on, and he told me what to do, and Blammer was not listening, and he finally listened, and what happened? What? Got beautiful corn this year.
Were you aware of corn sweat making it more humid for the rest of us?
I didn't know there was corn sweat, but I can tell you this. Corn loves humidity. It loves a little bit of water, but it loves humidity.
So I had no idea that this was a thing, and there were a couple of different meteorologists, I think, tweeting about it yesterday, and like they, you know, maps of the United States out there kind of showing how humid it is in the Midwest, Wisconsin, Iowa, parts of Illinois, Minnesota, all that. And here from Peyton Malone, you're not the only thing sweating. Look at the high blob of humidity in the Midwest. That's from corn sweat. Corn releases a lot of moisture in the summer, and that means high humidity. So corn is a big reason why it's more humid in the Midwest when we get warm days like yesterday and today. Corn is what's making it more humid?
Yes, it makes sense because people corn, right, for the most part, is on the way out. It's on the backside.
Like the sweet
it's
corn.
Almost
yeah.
done. Sweet corn. Horse corn.
Mm-hmm.
Or cow corn isn't quite there yet. So they're still sucking up a lot of this humidity, and it probably, you know, it's like the body. It expels a lot. So to me, yes, this makes a lot of sense.
I'm not saying it doesn't make sense. I just don't know how, after 38 years living in Wisconsin, going through the days that we had yesterday, and again, there's, you know, high heat warning here today. It was really humid yesterday. It was pretty humid on Sunday as well. I just don't know how I've never heard of Josh. You've lived here in Wisconsin Jake, your entire life. Have you ever heard of corn sweat?
Corn sweat becoming a thing I learned about yesterday and saw multiple people talk about blew my mind. And to see the concentrated area of all the places we know as heavily corn, like Wisconsin, Nebraska, parts of Illinois, a little bit into Minnesota.
Iowa.
It shocked me.
Well, let me ask you this. All right, let me ask you this, and this will hopefully make sense to you. Okay, when you work out and you got a lather going and you're lathered up and you go into your car, what's the first thing that happens?
It fogs up.
Yeah.
All the windows fog up.
Sure.
Because your body. So why wouldn't the same be for the same for corn?
Chewy, I'm not saying it doesn't make sense because it does.
Yeah.
The shocking part is that I have never heard a meteorologist talk about this once in my 38 years on this planet.
And I wasn't, like, obviously things put off moisture. It's part of, like, it makes sense, totally.
Yeah.
But for it to be a effect we can see and monitor of, hey, there's higher levels here because there's more corn, shocked me. An acre of mature corn can release up to 4,000 gallons of moisture into the air per day. And it's like, well, then no wonder it's so damn humid all the time. Yeah.
I can tell you
where
this.
Where the hell's all that water supposed to go?
Because number one, Blammer's an idiot. You're supposed to, what's the word I'm looking for? You're supposed to space out your corn. So you don't plant it all in one plant because it's going to all be ready at one time.
Mm-hmm.
He plants it all in one plant. So you got to get in there and pick it. So last week I went in and picked probably, I don't know, 3 bushels of corn. When you're in there, you can feel it.
Yeah?
It feels a little like a sauna. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just crazy to me that I have not heard about this, or have not heard, because again, I grew up in a rural area. I grew up in Horicon. The fact that I didn't never heard a farmer talk about, oh man, yeah, the corn sweating, causing it to be more humid here. The fact that I've never heard of, that's the shocking part.
Well, let me ask both of you this. To me, it sounds like now you guys are anti-corn.
Gonna say, I did start, you know, throwing around ideas. Maybe we mix in a couple drier crops here with the corn. I don't want to be full anti-corn. There's a lot of people exist off of it. But I think we can exist off of some other things, too, can't we?
So you want some wheat mixed in with the corn?
Yeah, why not? throw out some of the drier plants there.
Yeah. So you just want to house a bunch of cornstarch, right, Josh? A little mix it all together.
How's alfalfa do in Wisconsin? How about a little more of that? Does that put off a lot of hot moisture?
You got to let the bales dry out when you. That's why they tether it. See, we should have a farming show.
We'll get you hooked up with ESPN Beaver Dam or WXRO up there. We can have you do a farming show up there. We do have to. We are just blowing up the clock today. We just don't care.
Yeah, no rules. It's my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday. Happy birthday, Joshy.
Oh, happy birthday, buddy.
Hey, thanks, guys.
We're going to go through some NFC player props, NFC North player props, in honor of Joshy's birthday. In 2 minutes, Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.